For the boxer.
You fought boxing at all?
Yeah.
You see
Hagler?
No, did you see him?
Baby Norton?
No, that little
bird on
our agenda today is House Bill 2087. And what I would like to do today is to work through the elements of the potential final form bill, see if we can reach agreement as a committee on the content of those elements, and then have Mr. Gruber prepare a final form bill that we can review and report out. There are about Representative Lombard and I and Ms. Zuckerman spent the noon hour listing the elements and issues. There are about 15 of them. I'll just take them one by one in relation to the draft and see if we can settle the committee's position on that for a final draft instruction. At the previous work session, we had, I think, agreed as a committee that we would delete any of the provisions of the bill that would revise the relationship of the parole board and the sentencing judges in terms of uses of minimum mandatories and overrides. So that relationship for the next biennium would stay as it now is. In our further discussions at noon, we are agreed to recommend that we will strike all of the references in the bill that would make any changes in the name of the board or in the name of the status of parole or in the advisory commission. Those particular changes would be taken out of the bill and left for further study and consideration. Is there any objection? Representative Lombard?
Well, I was going to say, ask, you know, whether anybody objected. I don't feel all that strongly, but I think they're merely cosmetic changes, and I think it gives cause for a lot of redrafting and paperwork to have to go through and change them. And in my mind, the cosmetic change doesn't do anything vis-a-vis the public's perception of what we're doing.
The next issue is the time for completion of the pre-sentence reports, which is dealt with in Section 7 of the bill, page 6. In our noontime discussion, we reviewed again the question of whether the time limits specified in the bill were realistic. And secondly, we noted again that we had left unresolved from the earlier meeting the fixing of the time when the deadline, when the maximum period would begin, from which it would begin to be calculated. I think we had tentatively agreed at the last work session that we would stay with the time limits in the bill and fix them in relation to a point in time that we were describing as notification or notice of a finding of guilt.
As opposed to the entry of an order.
Notification of finding of guilt is the way I have written it.
Bob, do you want to come up for a moment? We may have some, Hazel, why don't you come up also? We may have some questions for you as we go along. It might be just as convenient to have you up here. Bob, is that a more accurate way of capturing what we were trying to do than to simply make reference to a request for a pre-sentence report?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Bob Watson, Administrator of the Corrections Division. That language satisfied the questions we had about the notice. We needed something definite to say PSI is requested. We think this language would clear that question up, and we're satisfied with that.
So notification of a finding of guilt?
We just want a notice now. What the rest of that phrase has to include, I'd leave to your judgment. But as long as we know we're going to get a notice, so we know that we're expected to do something, that's really, from the correction standpoint, all we're interested in.
President Lombard?
Well, my question, I guess, is this, that on the 8th, your testimony followed that of Judges Hargraves and Bonebright and Mark Sussman. My notes indicate that the judges and Sussman all felt that the time limits, while commendable, weren't realistic. Now, I don't want to unrealistically tie you down to a time frame that in most cases you cannot achieve. So I guess you still stand by your previous remarks that you think that you feel that under these time frames you can comply with them.
Yes. It's been a subject of discussion at two of our regional field staff meetings. It will take some rearranging of workload priorities, but in we're very familiar with the problems of being crowded. If we can help the jails by rearranging priorities, we think we ought to do it. So the position is that for those in custody with notice after 20 days, we can get the PSI ready. They raise some questions. I don't think it needs to be addressed in the statutes. Quite often there are multiple trials and convictions that flow, and sometimes these people are moved from one location to another, but I think the sub C takes care of that. When we can let the judge know, hey, the person isn't here, we can't proceed, then we get that taken care of. So I don't, I'm not advocating any change in what's before the committee in the way of language, but we've thought it through very carefully. The 20 days we think we can manage, but it will take some rearrangement of work. But it's worth it, we think, for the whole system to do that.
How about the out-of-custody 30 days? It's been several years since I've done any criminal defense work, but I found when I had somebody who was out, I couldn't get it sooner than 45 or 50 days.
There seemed to be less anxiety about that one than the 20. Where you make it a priority, which we do in the diagnostic center in Portland, the average is considerably under 20 days. So if, when you really go after it, you can do it. And, so it's a matter of statewide making it a priority. The field chiefs are willing to do that.
Are you suggesting a change in the 30 days?
No. We may find it's a disaster to come in the next session, but my understanding now, and after two careful discussions with the people responsible for doing it, they say these dates are realistic.
Surprised so that me. When my judges call me, I can refer them to you.
Right. Yes.
You have a listed home number, they may not. They may be busy during the day.
24-hour answer.
We could put that in subsection 2C.
Mr. Chair, I was just thinking as we were, the bill that came over from the Senate on the statements from victims, we should, somehow that fits in with this, I'm saying, regarding how many family members we're going to have to contact and things may require additional time, just to raise that for a point of reference rather than asking to change these dates.
We are including, of course, court authorization, including safety valve. Chair would move that in lines 22 and 25, the reference to the conviction be stricken, and we would insert instead following notice of entry of a finding of guilt. Is there objection?
Mr. Chair. Just in, on line 20 and 23, we refer to when a convicted person is held in custody following conviction, with more references to conviction.
What do you say, Representative?
I guess they're, is it right? They're not a convicted person. They haven't been convicted. Is that?
So there's no conviction until the, according to Judge Joan Bonebright, until the sentence is set and there's a judgment order. so we would have to accommodate, we would, I think it would be appropriate to change it to something about when a person who has been found guilty, they've been found guilty, they just haven't been technically convicted, as I understand it, until that order's in.
When a person is held in custody following a...
After having been found guilty by a trier of fact, because it could be a jury, it could be a judge.
Or a plea.
Tell you what, let me, for purposes of my motion, include those necessary changes and let those be worked out with legislative counsel, if that would be agreeable. Is there any objection to the amendment to Section 7? Linda?
I was just going to ask that. The other question where it leaves me confused is that whether or not you have to prepare a PSI, you're still going to get notification. Don't you get notification that a person's been found guilty? I mean, sometimes you don't have to do a PSI. All I wanted to make sure of is in using this language, that was why I had the question about whether they request the PSI or do they send you a notice of guilt and say, but in this case, don't send us the PSI, or are you going to be, when we say that you shall prepare this, furnish this report within these time frames of receiving notification of guilt?
I think the practice is so varied across the state that it was very difficult for us to describe how it's done. Quite often, it's by phone call. Sometimes it's an order from the judge.
Okay. Because there is the other provision that says that
it may waive it.
It can be waived, and you find that out somehow.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
That does result in a document of some kind that we know about.
Any further on Section 7? The next issue is raised in Section 10, which is the consecutive sentence guidelines section. It is our recommendation to the committee that there be guidelines retained in the bill. And the two questions we have, I think, to resolve would be whether the statement of the guidelines as now in the bill should be revised, A, according to the amendments proposed by the Solicitor General at the last work session, or B, replaced by proposed amendments of the Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, both of which were distributed at the last work session, I believe.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Smith?
Mr. Pete Sandrock from the community was telling me that the Lithgate decision has been handed down by the Supreme Court yesterday. And I gather from what he's told me, the opinion says that they are going to err on the side of leniency on the question of mergers every time until the legislature gets around to setting up what it wants. And that's in the Supreme Court decision. I don't know that you want to highlight that anymore, but as we act on this section, we might have in mind whatever that opinion has directed us to do.
I have someone attempting to get a copy.
All right.
Oh. Oh, goody.
Well, let's do this. In light of the decision, let's see if we can reach tentative resolution for final drafting purposes, and then we'll review the decision for whatever effect that might have on the bill as if it's ready for final action of the committee. Let's take a moment to review and compare the amendments of the Solicitor General with the OCDLA alternative. The alternative of OCDLA is to the merger section. Let's hold that. The amendments of the Solicitor General relate in part to merger. We'll come to that in a moment, but the portion I want to concentrate on now relates to the consecutive sentencing portion of the bill, Section 10. Those are the June 14th amendments of the Solicitor General. page 9 of the working draft. Is the department represented here today? Department of Justice?
No,
it's not. Are you here for, on behalf of...
I'm here on behalf of the DAs.
Okay. Well, we have the amendments, so I don't think it's... I just was curious if Bill or his... I guess his successor would now be. Has he been formally appointed Deputy Attorney General?
Yes, sworn in yesterday.
On page 9 of the working draft, line 4, delete the entire line and all of line 5 up to and including criminal conduct and insert the maximum. So the sentence would read, court shall not impose a consecutive sentence unless the court finds that the maximum term of imprisonment provided by the range then established for the offense pursuant to ORS 144780. I believe the amendment is an error. It goes on to say, and that, and I think he means to say, would not be commensurate with the seriousness of the total course of the defendant's criminal conduct, and that it would not adequately protect the public if a concurrent term of imprisonment were imposed. Now, an issue raised in connection with that amendment at the last work session was whether or not that reference to the range then established under the matrix would include how was that issue stated, Linda?
Excuse me.
The issue dealing with the reference to the maximum term of imprisonment under the range. The issue was whether that included the enhancements that the board might make.
Whether that would recognize the fact when they were going to say that in this amendment that the court would be considering the range provided under 144780, whether they also would be able to consider the fact that the ability of the parole board to enhance in cases of aggravation beyond the matrix range.
Representative Lombard and I really didn't discuss that aspect in detail, simply noted that that issue was raised at the first hearing. It would certainly be my view that enhancement potential should be taken into account in judging the adequacy of the matrix if this language were substituted. Discussion on that? Chair would move the adoption of paragraph 1 of the Gary Amendment of June 14th. Except that the language and that it would be inserted to follow line 5. It would be inserted between the words and would. The sentence would read, as amended, the court shall not impose a consecutive sentence unless the court finds that the maximum term of imprisonment provided by the range then established for the offense pursuant to ORS 144780 would not be commensurate with the seriousness of the total course of defendant's criminal conduct and that it would not adequately protect. I think it's clear if you don't insert that language at all, and would not adequately protect. So I'll strike from my motion the insertion of and that it. Discussion of the amendment. There's no online.
I guess I'm not entirely clear whether Mr. Gary wanted to
keep in, at least as you read, the provision commensurate with the seriousness of the total course of the defendant's criminal conduct.
That's going to enter, because...
Yes, my notes.
It has to be in there. Is that what Gary said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, let's see, line. Yeah. That was my impression.
Well, no, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Well, I guess it does go out. Line 5, he deletes all of line 4, mm-hmm. and all of line 5 up to and including criminal conduct.
And.
So it would read, the court shall not impose a consecutive sentence unless the court finds that the period of imprisonment...
Unless the court finds
that the maximum term of imprisonment provided by the range then established for the offense pursuant to ORS 144780 would not adequately protect the public.
Right. Yeah.
And I think you're right in taking out the
and. You take out and that it makes sense.
So I'd move to delete from the Gary Amendment the words and that it and to adopt Amendment number 1 as amended. Discussion? Is there objection? The second proposed amendment is on page 9, line 14. To delete, when the same conduct or criminal episode, and insert when a person's conduct during a continuous and uninterrupted course of conduct. And the same amendment is proposed for line 18 on page 9, start of the next subparagraph. And the chair would move the adoption of numbers 2 and 3 of the Gary amendments. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Lombard.
Since that's now, I believe, taking this into merger provisions, I gather by that motion, and I do support it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think you better be aware of that, though, because it would be...
Thank you, Representative Robert. I
say no to the OCDLA amendments.
Yeah, I...
Didn't mean to slip over there. I am prepared to support you.
Is there further discussion of section 10 dealing with imposition of concurrent sentences? All right. Let's go to section,
Mr. Chair.
President Smith?
My notes show that we had some criticisms in section 10, looking at still page 9, lines 7 through 11, because you're still dealing with required special findings. That's still part of section 10, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
And my notes suggest that Judge Hargraves was unsure of what those findings are. Maybe we're going to deal with that later. We discussed whether we were going to outline the nature of the findings, specify them, what their relationship were to studying the matrix.
I think I believe, Linda, we are alluding to the finding under subparagraph 4 above. Isn't that correct?
Just going back and
perhaps we ought to just say so.
If you look at subsection 5, on the immediate preceding page, the last two sentences, it would be that kind of language. I think it just needs a relation back clause.
Yeah, I don't know that there's any difference in this context between stating the reasons for imposing the consecutive sentence and making the findings.
That may be surplusing. If you make the findings, you probably supply the reasoning.
Chair would move that subsection 6 of section 10 be amended to delete the reference to lines 8 and 9 would be revised to reference the required findings back to those under subsection 4. Objection. Anything more in section 10? Did you also in that same subsection want to delete the statement of reasons?
Yes, I'm sorry, that was that's included in my note.
The second sentence? Is that second sentence 9 to 11 eliminated for denying misunderstanding?
It's in both line 8 and line 11, 10. The reference to statement of reasons.
Oh, and just leave it with
the statement
findings.
Required findings.
Is that clear? Anything more in section 10? Okay, section 12.
Were you placing a motion on that?
Well, let's take the OCDLA alternative, which the members have. Let me determine if there are any members who wish to move to substitute those provisions for the present provisions on merger in the bill.
That would be the equivalent of their section 2.
Yes.
And it would be all of section 2 to replace.
It's all section 2.
I believe section 2 would be totally substituted for section 12. Representative Weatherford.
When we looked these over last week, I thought that they brought some clarity to what has been a difficult area for the courts. I was impressed with their efforts to codify the law, so I would be inclined to support the OCDLA provisions.
It really seems to bifurcate the subsections 2 and 3 of section 2 using chapter 163, which would be crimes against persons, comes down harder on crimes against persons and allows multiple convictions and multiple sentences. And I take it then probably, let's see, then sub 4 is the Garcia situation. Five could be the situation of a drunk driver careening off the road into a group of school children or something. It would be, it results in injury to more than one victim due to criminal negligence. There could be as many convictions as there are victims, but only one sentence imposed.
Let me ask the OCDLA representative to come up, please. And Peter, would you like to come up also? Some of us, those of us who were working on that property tax committee were gone when we had the presentation of these amendments initially. Maybe we could just take a moment to go over those and hear also the DA response. Would you like to go ahead?
Sure. My name is Dave Broom. I'm representing the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. As I explained at the hearing, what we attempted to do with our proposed alternative was to present the codification of existing law. Subsection 2 is the basic law, and the rest of them are exceptions. My feeling when I spoke to the committee before was that Garcia was perhaps the case that generated the most antagonism toward the area of merger. We went ahead, and as Representative Smith pointed out, subsection 4 is a codification of Garcia. The Lindtway, I don't want to get into Lindtway too much because I know the committee hasn't had a chance to read it, but in my reading of it, they do support the Garcia, well, Lent wrote both of the decisions, so he supported his Garcia decision. His basic thrust, as I read it, is that if the legislature has not acted in an area, and for example, in the sodomy statutes, which was Garcia, or the attempted use of a knife or a weapon in the Lindtway area, then they were going to lean toward the side